Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is the text number. The last presidential election took place on Friday, the 27th of October 2018. There was a significant number of candidates, including the then incumbent Michael Daniel Higgins, Peter Casey, Sean Gallagher, Leonie Reid, Joan Freeman, Gavin Duffy, Gemma Doherty, I think, was in there as well, in fairness. Michael D. Higgins ended up, after transfers, with over 1 million votes. By the way, 1.5 million people voted. That's the turnout was, 44-45%. Peter Casey got 350,000. Sean Gallagher got 95,000. Leah Nirita got 95. Sinn Féin, Joan Freeman got 90. And Gavin Duffy got 32. And as you know, Michael D. Higgins, as was predicted this year, this week, seven years ago, he would walk away with it, and he has. So, but this year, it's an open field, because Michael Daniel Higgins cannot stand again, because he's two terms. By the way, he was nominated. You basically can nominate, if you're president and you want to stand again, you can nominate yourself for a second term, but it is hard to get a nomination now. A candidate must secure the backing of at least 20 Oireachtas members. That's either members of Dáil Éireann and the Seanad, or combined, or whatever. Now, that number, the combined numbers in Seanad and Dáil Éireann now is well over 200 because of the expansion in the Dáil. But you have to get 20 members of the Oireachtas. You can be nominated if you receive the backing of at least four county or city councils. Now, the sting of the ointment here is, the fly in the ointment even, is that each council can only nominate one candidate. Do you follow me? So there was a hustings, as we know, the last time, and four or five candidates would go before a council and lay yourself in front of them, and then they would pick one. And as I said, the incumbent president can't nominate himself or herself or themselves, so to speak. But the election has to happen by October 27th. It seems to be wide open. All the names in the public domain so far, in the papers and that over the weekend, are all politicians. And if you go back through the presidents of Ireland since Douglas Hyde was elected way back in the, well, the role wasn't the exact same, every president was either had the backing of a political party or was nominated by a political party. So I just said an hour ago when I was talking to Shay Bourne, I said the listeners have already a nomination. A number of you want to nominate Bono. I think you should go for it. We'll hear from his supporter in a sec. Mairead McGuinness, Senator Michael McDowell, Senator Tom Clonan, Anna Nolan of celebrity fame, Big Brother fame, she's a well-known character. If you want to nominate and come on and say why they think, it can be an activist, it can be a celebrity, it can be a politician, it can be the chairperson of your local resident association who has achieved incredible things, and you think, because I remember, the people remember Derek Nally from County Munclody, County Wexford. He was heavily involved in the Garda Representative Association, and then he was involved in activities for older people. And he ran a very formidable campaign. That was the time Dana also stood, and it was won by A.D. Roach stood, and it was won by Mary McAleese. Okay, let's go. We'll go in alphabet. No, we won't do alphabetical order because I haven't got a sort in alphabetical. Louise Hassan, who do you wish to nominate for Áras an Uachtaráin?
Hello, happy New Year, Joe.
Nice to talk to you too, and many more to our listeners. Who do you want to nominate, Louise?
I'd like to nominate Senator Tom Clonan.
Okay, stay there. Maeve Gavin, 51551, Joe at RTE. Who would you like to nominate to be our next president, Maeve?
Hi, Joe. I would like to nominate Mairead McGuinness.
The current EU, well, she's the recent EU Commissioner, former Fine Gael TD and Fine Gael Senator as well. And, sorry, Fine Gael, she wasn't ever TD, she was an MEP. Jackie Barron, who do you want to nominate?
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon. I'd like to nominate Bono.
Okay. Jay Dynan, who would you like to nominate for
an
expert?
Joe.
Go ahead, Jay.
I'd like to nominate Mr. Michael McDougall.
Senator Michael McDougall. Okay.
Senator Michael McDougall, indeed.
Okay, Louise, you have a minute to say why Tom Clonan should be the next. He's a senator. You tell us why you think Tom should be the next president.
Okay, well, firstly, I have a personal experience of him advocating for myself and my daughter. So he does what he says on the tin. He actually came and met us, brought us into the Dáil and into the Senate and spoke for us. But apart from that, he's a very strong proponent of disability rights. As you know, he has a disabled child. He was also a captain in the Defence Forces. Mm-hmm. He is an advocate for peaceful dialogue for an Irish neutrality. But he also exposed endemic sexual violence against women in Ireland's armed forces. And he advocates for the domestic mm-hmm. violence bills in 2020. So he advocates for the marginalised, the disabled. He has experience in the Shannon. And he actually is a man of integrity. He really does care. When he says he's going to do something and speak for you, he goes ahead and does it. Okay. So he has experience across the board in both in the Defence Forces, in politics, but also in disability services. And as we know, disability services are so far below what we are needed in Ireland. And I think that we need a strong voice as a president across the board for those disabilities, but also for peace or for violence against women. And he is a lovely, lovely man. I've met him.
Tom Clonan. That's Tom Clonan. He was born in 1965. He was born about 500 yards from where Bono was born. He was born in Ballygall in Finglas, and Bono was born down further down opposite the autobahn in what is now Glasnevin. And between 1996 and 2000, that's probably how Tom became to national prominence 25 years ago, he conducted a serious investigation into the status and roles assigned female personnel in the Permanent Defence Force. That's Tom Clonan. Mairead McGuinness, Maeve Gavin, tell us why you think Mairead McGuinness would make a great president.
Hi, Joe. My nominee would be Mairead McGuinness. I think she is very articulate and a strong communicator, and she has amazing experience behind her. She represented Ireland in the EU in a very positive manner, and her contribution to the EU as European Commissioner for Financial Services for 4 years was absolutely outstanding. The EU Parliament represents over 400 million people, and Mairead served in important senior roles in that organisation. Mm-hmm. Therefore, she would have no problem serving as President of Ireland that represents 6 million people. She is well respected, not only in Ireland, in Europe, but all over the world. And that's why she is my nominee.
Okay. And Jackie Barron Bono. Okay, by the way, Jackie. Jackie?
No.
Bono's already God. Why would you demote him to president?
you can never have enough titles, can you?
Yeah. Why do you want Paul Hewson to be our next president?
Well, because he's a human rights activist. Yeah. He's an activist for the environment, and he's a philanthropist. And he's the co-founder of One and Red, and that was for debt and to prevent and eradicate poverty and hunger in Africa.
Yeah.
He has lobbied legislators around the world, including American presidents, Bush, etc. And
he did, in fairness, just to help you there,
yeah.
And I'd help other candidates if that comes into, he not just lobbied George Bush Jr., so to speak, he convinced George Bush Jr. by bringing him to Africa to put money into the whole AIDS situation. He persuaded, and George Bush admits this, Bono persuaded him almost single-handedly to change the US position, the richest country in the world, on the whole situation in Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's also a co-founder of the Rise Fund, and that's for a positive social and environmental change.
Okay.
He's a fantastic activist, and as I say, a philanthropist. I mean, part of you two alone, they gave to the Irish COVID Fund. You know, people, businesses that went out, they gave, I think, 10 million, and then another 1.5 million to the live music industry.
Okay, I will come back to people. I'll give people everyone a second go. Jane Dynan. 51551 is the text number. Jane, Senator Michael McDowell as our next president, why?
He was the first name, Joe, that popped into my head when I heard you asking for us to nominate presidents. He's just a man I think is very honest. I think he's of a similar ilk to our last few presidents, Mary O'Rourke, Mary McAleese, and Michael D. Higgins.
Mary Robinson, Higgins.
And Mary Robinson, Robinson.
No problem.
It's just a name that came into my head. I won't be able to speak as eloquently about him as other people before me, but I just think he's an honest man, an honest broker, and I think he would make a great president. I think that we're facing into a very difficult world with what's happening all around Europe and with America. We don't know what's going to happen when Mr. Trump comes, and I just think we need somebody who knows his history and is able to go out and speak for the people of this country if and he had to.
He's a practicing barrister.
He's a practicing barrister, of course, and he's in the Senate.
People forget that he was also tarnished for a period. Minister for Justice, a senator, and he's the politician, along with Padraig Tobin, in fairness, he was the politician who called the two referendum last year. He called them correctly. While all the other main political parties were on the losing side, and it was a pretty significant loss as well. Okay, Jay, stay there, Jane. 51551. Mary Chute. Mary, who would you like to see as our next president?
Good afternoon, Joe. I would like to recommend Olivia O'Leary.
Okay, journalist. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I heard her speak recently in Dunleary Library. And she, as I sat there, I just thought, you would make an amazing president. She's articulate, intelligent. She's very well respected. And she also would represent Ireland in every way possible. And I would be a fan of Olivia's.
And what
I
was
think she would be on a par with previous presidents.
Okay, and what was the occasion in the Lexicon Library in Dunleary?
She was speaking with Maria Callas on her book, Savage Beast.
Oh, yeah, Maria Callas, a fantastic book.
Which is an excellent read.
Okay.
And everybody in Ireland should read that book.
Yeah. But you said you felt like saying to her, Olivia, go for the Oris. Did you say it to her?
I didn't say it to her because I was there with my daughter and we were in company with other people. I didn't get a chance.
Okay.
But I would like to say Olivia would do the business. She's very social.
Very
social, very friendly. And she also, she doesn't cross people for the sake of crossing them. She would be good.
Right, I know Olivia's and she gave a lecture, the Gayborn Memorial Lecture there in October in Dublin that I was at, and she did an incredible, it was about disinformation and but she really, really well thought out, really well researched. And but do you think being a journalist would go against her, Mary? Remember, she's got to get 20 members of the Oireachtas to nominate her. Even if we got 1 million people on a petition with Olivia's name on it, she wouldn't get the nomination. And then she's to get 4 county councils. She's to compete to get 4 county councils. Do you think that might be difficult if you were not a member of a political party?
Well, I think times are changing in Ireland.
Okay.
And yeah, I do, definitely. And when we see a new Cathaoirleach female, I definitely think Olivia would have a chance. She would be in with the chance, yes.
Okay, stay with us, Mary. Bernadette Hopkins is in Donegal. 51551. Who do you wish to nominate, even though he can't? Who do you wish to see as the next president, Bernadette?
Hi, Joe. Joe, I would like to see Catherine Conley
okay, the former
as our next president.
TD, Galway.
Yeah.
She was Deputy Count Corda. She was actually in the chair and on TV a lot as Deputy Count Corda. Why do you wish to see Catherine Conley as our next president?
I think she's somebody that really cares about people. She's a human rights activist. She's women's rights. She steered us very well in the last referendum, looking after disability rights,
okay.
Children's rights, and women in the homes rights. So, and I always think she's a very independent voice. She's not attached to any political party. Right. She's very intelligent, and she's also a lawyer. So she understands how things work, and she'd be a great ambassador, I think, for Ireland in the world.
Okay. So that's Catherine Connolly's name in TD, and I'll come back to people and give them a second. Anyone I haven't given a second go to, I'll give a second go to. Bernadette Bergen is in Mayo. Bernadette, who would you like to nominate?
I'd like to nominate Eamon Ryan.
Okay.
The reason former
leader of the Green Party, minister, TD for many years. Why?
Because I think the way we are going, perhaps with the environment at the moment, it's beginning to take, it's gone down the line in people's, I suppose, pressure that they're putting on things. Because mm-hmm. you have Trump, who have just come in now, and he wants to drill and burn and do all that. I'm a little bit concerned about our own government, that it may not be a priority. It's slipped down along the list, I think, a bit there. Even reading your own George Lee this morning, you know, just talking about how the environment is slipping down the list in many countries. Mm-hmm. I think it would be good to have Eamon. Eamon is very experienced.
Even though the presidency does not have any direct party political role, and indeed is not supposed to have as such any role apart from dissolving in Oireachtas or whatever the Dáil. Now, maybe it's changed, and maybe Michael D, you can tell me, Michael D Higgins has pushed out our understanding, and indeed Mary Robinson, and indeed Mary McAleese. Do you not think Eamon Ryan, by the way, he did put his name forward before, remember?
I
don't know how long it lasts for, but he did put his name forward, so he is interested in it. But do you not think, but he was interested, mm-hmm. Do you not think that that he'd be constrained as president?
Well, I think just as the three people even that you have mentioned there have broadened it out. People are not just left up there in the hours and do nothing, but because they'll be meeting other perhaps dignitaries coming, you can use the place up there as an example. They can bring different groups to show what can be done. No more than we always, as you say, Mary Robinson, our present man that's there, they did expand it. They haven't been silent, and they have been able to do something. Now, he mightn't get any flights on Ryanair, but however, he would be, he would think of some ways, I think, of trying to...
So we're buying a new government jet, and we're buying four, about time, and we're buying four Fisher Price helicopters for the Air Corps.
That's right.
Small little things. That's great. So he might be able to use them. Okay, so you want to see Eamon Ryan. Okay, stay with us more after this break.
Thank you very much.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I wanted to ask the Bono nominator a couple of questions about the one. How would you persuade Bono to go for the job? But the name so far in the Liveline list of Liveline listeners' list of people they would like to see as a president are Mairead McGuinness, Bono, Michael McDowell, Tom Clonan, Olivia O'Leary, Eamon Ryan, Catherine Connolly. Maybe I've missed one there. Have I in the list? Let me go to Brenda Hartnett. Brenda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And as I said earlier, you're entitled to nominate who you wish, because people in other countries, unknowns, have come from but outside the political system and won. Who do you wish to nominate, Brenda?
Well, I'm going to nominate my darling twin sister, Paula Galvin.
Okay.
She's a retired teacher. She has done a lot of work in terms of global development and social justice. She was instrumental in making her the town of Clondalkin a fair trade city or town. She represented Ireland and Irish teachers at the recent COP summit in Dubai.
COP28,
yeah. Yes, she was only one of four, four or five teachers worldwide that spoke. And so she had done a lot of work in terms of giving voice to the children she taught in terms of climate justice and social justice generally, and has lectured in DCU and PATH on the same subject. Yeah, so I'm very proud of her.
Okay. Has she ever stood for election before to any body?
No, she has been approached by various parties because of the work she's done in Clondalkin.
If she was approached, for example, what you're saying there, I'm gathering the Green Party might be interested, if Eamon Ryan isn't interested. If she was approached, do you think she'd be amenable?
Well, I did briefly mention I thought it was important.
So you didn't want it to come as a complete surprise that her sister, was going on national radio to try and get her a spot in the Phoenix Park. So, and what did she say? Now, seriously, it's me and not being too facetious. What did she say?
Well, she did think I was joking, but no, I don't think she would have a problem. I mean, she's met Michael D a number of times because of her work with her children in terms of climate justice. So they've made a number of visits to the ORIS herself and her sister.
Okay, and just tell us a little bit about Paula Galvin. Where is she from originally? Your twin.
Well, we grew up in Ballymun. I was at college for New Joe. We were at UCD together. When you organised the library strike, I think it was. So Paula went straight into teaching from secondary school and had done her master's in global development and, as I said, climate justice. And, you know, it's been quite an instrumental force in introducing global development as a subject into the national school curriculum.
Now, do you think she'd have a chance of getting a nomination? Because you have to have 20 members of the Oireachtas or four city or county councils, and each city or county council can only nominate one person.
I know she has some people who have been interested in her campaign, in the South. I'm trying to remember what the constituency would be. She lives herself in Eclipse, so that kind of area.
It is very hard to get a nom. It is loaded against the ordinary person, the outsider, who's not in a political party. Sure. Because it's basically, it's in the hands, the nomination to be president, and it is a general election. Everyone is entitled to vote who's under electoral register.
Vote, of course.
Like the Shannon elections, where it's only 1% of the population, or the valid population, that can actually vote.
Yes.
How would she go about getting a nomination? How would you get over that hurdle?
I could be her campaign manager.
And you think the Green agenda would appeal to county councillors, and indeed, as I say, there's the number of eligible nominators in Leinster House and the Shannon is well over 220 at this stage, I think. So would it be too hard to get 20 names? Maybe not. Remember the last time out, a number of TDs said, I'm not necessarily supporting this person. I will not necessarily be voting for this person, but I do believe that this person has a right to have their name on the ballot paper. Okay, stay there, Brenda. That's Paula Hartnett.
Paula Galvin.
Oh, Paula Galvin. I'm sorry, I'm getting it. There's a...
No, that's okay. That's my married name.
Okay. But she was born Paula Galvin, and she was born at the same time as Brenda Galvin. Same day.
No, sorry.
Our maiden name is Kenny.
Okay.
Paul and Brenda Kenny. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, just to confuse.
What name would be on the ballot paper? You have me confused. Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, no, I take your point. That's Brenda. Brenda Hartnett nominating her sister, twin sister Paula Kenny, who's an environmentalist and teacher and long-standing campaigner and activist. Finbar Bevan is in Cork. Finbar O'Connor.
Good afternoon.
Who do you wish?
My nominee would be Michael O'Leary of Ryanair.
Okay.
That man has done more. He has done more for Ireland than any president ever before him. He has huge employment. He brings millions into the country every year, and he's honest. He's very, very honest what he has to say.
And
there wouldn't be hope of him getting a nomination from any TDs because they'd be ashamed, afraid of their life, that he would embarrass them.
But you think, why would Michael O'Leary move into a smaller house in Áras an Uachtaráin?
Very good. But that's just the character he is. I think he is one of the great characters, commercial characters of Ireland that ever lived, I think, in Ireland. He is a fantastic man. He speaks his mind. He doesn't go home. He shutters open on him. He's a man that says it as it is. Yeah. He doesn't go around blasting.
But Finbar, would the job then not constrain Michael? Would he not be in a double seatbelt?
I don't think anything would stop that man. Would you really believe that any TD would give him the sponsor for him?
Well, as I pointed out before, and I see you, Michael O'Leary pays his taxes in Ireland. One year he paid 14 million in income tax or whatever. He is a part of our rich tapestry.
That few bob he gets for being in prison, I don't think he'd even take it.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be income to him at all. I'd say that he'd just leave it off to some charity or something. In fairness, I think he's a great man.
Why do you think he wouldn't be able to get... I think he would be able to get a nomination.
Well, I'm only saying he might embarrass them and they'd be afraid to be embarrassed, especially TDs who are sitting...
But they're all well used. They're all playing senior hurling at this stage. You should be well used to being embarrassed and hectored and whatever happens in the world we live in. I think he would get a nomination. Two, it would make the presidential election extraordinarily. It would be an international media event.
I can't
see him doing it. I just can't, and it's not the house guy.
If he did get a nomination, I think he would walk it.
Okay.
And I think he would be a very, very interesting president. He wouldn't have to... I can never imagine him saying, you can only say that today. I can never imagine him saying, what? No, I'll say what I want to say.
And wouldn't it make the presidential debates on TV or whatever fascinating? You never know what he's going to come out with.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. He's doing that for years and he doesn't care about him because he's such a wealthy man. And he doesn't care, like, there's no one can make him poor. I'm rich, I can do what I like. I say what I like. But he says right. He doesn't waffle on, like a good TD would do when he's asked a question. Yeah. He doesn't waffle, he tells it as it is.
But did he not say recently, he said, I think I don't know how many children, I think he's three, but he said something like his two boys, one of them must be near 20, he said they're more mature than he is. My point is, he doesn't be times, which is a great characteristic, by the way. It's a downfall. Take himself too seriously.
Exactly, Michael D. Higgins says wonderful speeches.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They're all probably written for him.
He writes a lot of them himself. Yeah.
But he cannot say anything that it's not passed for him. When he does say one or two things out of the way, the country's up in arms against him. That's where the president's, I don't know, it's a kind of a figurehead and nothing else for signing bills and stuff he has to basically, and go around the world on free trips. But yeah. I think Michael O'Leary will go on his own jet anyway, so there's enough fear of him. So there's not a saving for the taxpayer.
Yeah, but can Ryanair do without, I know none of us are in the spot, but can Ryanair do without Michael O'Leary?
Do you think he couldn't do two jobs at one time?
You wouldn't be allowed. He couldn't fetch up now Buckingham Palace to meet Queen Camilla or King Charles. He couldn't fetch up now in a Ryanair T-shirt with a Ryanair bag.
And no better bag. I can see him walking up with his collar open and saying to him, how's it going, Charles? Nice day, isn't it?
Okay. So far on the list, Mairead McGuinness, Bono, Michael McDool, Tom Clonan, Michael O'Leary, Olivia O'Leary, Eamon Ryan, Catherine Connolly, Paula Kenny, and as you just heard there, Michael O'Leary, and more after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We'll come back to other names that are coming in. Lots of other names coming in. Fascinating names about who should get on the nomination paper, despite the difficulty of getting your name on that list for the presidential election later on this year. Now, this day next year, 2026, 2nd of January, RTE, this year's station, will be celebrating 100 years since we first went on air, believe it or not, on the 1st of January 1926. It's an incredible centenary. But over the last few days, if you've been listening, especially late at night, which I do, if you listen to BBC Radio 4, they did a fascinating series of programmes about a piece of their history, their centenary they marked on the 1st of January 2025, because on the 1st of January 1925, they broadcast the shipping forecast, okay? And any of you late-nighters will know, if you're listening to BBC Radio 4, at exactly 48 minutes past midnight, every single night, without exception, it's repeated, by the way, during the day at different times, but this is the one I think most people will hear, at 48 seconds, this is what you... 48 minutes after midnight. This is what you hear every single night. That piece of music was written by Ronald Binge, and it was because his son was being interviewed. That's what I heard. Ronald has passed away. He died in September 1979. And at the time, in the early 1960s, the BBC radio put out a call to composers to ask them, would you like to submit pieces of music, instrumental piece of music, that we could use on whatever programme we wish, on whatever, obviously they can pay it, on whatever occasion. And he submitted Sailing By, which is called, and that was the one that was pieced, that was chosen to the shipping forecast at that stage. It had been going on for 50 years, but that was a piece chosen, and it's so associated from 1963 to the shipping forecast. Now, let's talk to somebody, especially if you're listening to me and you haven't a clue what I'm talking about, but why this broadcast, which was briefly interrupted, as you can understand, during World War II, but apart from that, it's never missed a beat. John Carney is in Cape Clear in Baltimore. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Will you explain to our non-mariners why this, and by the way, the BBC say this piece will run, the shipping form we play, we'll give you an example of it in a sec, they say it will run in perpetuity, despite technology, they will never get rid of it. Why is the radio, this shipping forecast, so important?
Yes, Joe, for every type of mariner from back then, from lighthouse keepers to fishermen to merchants to military, anyone that had connection with the sea, and especially like us in offshore islands, you know, the weather is an integrated part of our life and how we can come ashore and so forth. And so the BBC has shipping forecast has been running for so long, and it divides the region goes from the south Spain, Portugal, all the way up to southeast Iceland. And it goes all the way east in far as Norway and down the coast of Germany, the Netherlands. And basically what it does, Joe, is that it divides that area into 31 blocks. And where Ireland is divided into, in our region of the south, for an example, it's called Fastnet. Yeah. And to the west of us, it's called Shannon. Yes. And then you've Rockall, Mallon, Irish Sea, and then Lundy. And so when the shipping forecast comes on, for mariners, when we're going to sea or we're at sea, and when we get a forecast, it's so critical for us because we have to make a decision on the roles we're doing. Is the sea consciousness safe to operate? And the shipping forecast, obviously, before nowadays, we have so many items but backed in. And even we still listen to it because it is still a critical part of everyday merchant marine, really, okay. Around our coast.
And if you were on, if somebody was on watch, which you do be on the deck of a ship or the bridge of a ship, and if you were on watch after midnight, you would, as a matter of course, have it turned on. You would listen to the shipping forecast with a pen and paper handy or whatever.
Absolutely, the radio officer. There's no question. He write down everything, and when the captain is there, because obviously the watches go through the night, and certainly it's we'd be listening to it, and obviously that music is fairly familiar to a lot of us.
Okay, the shipping forecast that we're talking about is broadcast on BBC Radio 4 at 48 minutes past midnight every single night. It was established by Vice Admiral. It's 100 years old. That's the centenary yesterday. Vice Admiral Robert Fitzroy. He was the first professional weather forecaster. He was a captain of the HMS Beagle and co-founder of the Met Office. Now, in October 1859, the steam clipper Royal Charter was wrecked in a strong storm off Anglesey. 450 people lost their lives. And Fitzroy decided there and then that we needed a warning, a warning system for mariners. And he began by using telegraph communications. And then when radio was established in the UK, not too long before our good selves, they put it on. Let's listen to it. People will identify when they hear it being enunciated.
This is BBC Radio 4. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 1st of January 2025. There are warnings of gales in all areas except Trafalgar. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Viking 988, expected Sweden 982 by 1800 on New Year's Day. Low Faroe 986, moving steadily southeast, losing its identity. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking North Utsira, South Utsira, 40s, Cromartie. Cyclonic becoming northerly 6 to gale 8, rain then snow showers, good, occasionally poor. Fourth, Tyne Dogger. Southwest veering north or northwest 5 to 7. Occasionally gale 8 at first. Rain, snow showers later. Moderate or good. Occasionally very
John,
poor.
John, we keep it going there. But John, Fisher, what do those numbers mean? Low 988.2 expected. What does that mean? Moderate
or good. Yeah, it's basically what John you're doing is you're southwest the pressure gale, the pressure is lowering. Northwest 6 to gale and 8. Basically rain, you're going into a bit of really rough weather.
Okay.
And so if you're voyaging along the coast, you know the areas that you need to focus on.
Okay, so you'd understand. And losing its identity, what does that mean? Showers
later. Yeah, I think they're losing the identity. They're losing it because we have all these new models that are in there. But if I was taking a ship along the south coast of England and up the east coast, all those regions that you just spoke would take effect. And they were fairly accurate. But
let's listen to more of it.
Northwest Biscay. Southwesterly 6 to gale 8. Rain later. Good. Becoming poor later. Southeast Biscay. Northwest Trafalgar. Variable 2 to 4. Becoming southwesterly 4 to 6. Fair. Good. Southeast Trafalgar. Easterly 4 to 6, fair, good.
There are 31, as John Carney told us, 31 different areas in that forecast. And one of the people who did it for 25 years was Mairead Devlin. Mairead, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Lovely to speak to you.
Likewise. Great to hear your voice, especially in a much more relaxed setting. Mairead, were you told, because the example where this it's there's no drama allowed, I presume. There's no high notes, low notes, and emphasis on different. You have to deliver it in a particular way, do you?
You do indeed. And so you were listening to Vijay Ellis there, who's one of the current people. But there is an absolute formula. It is it's molds with it, and you have to do it in a certain way. Everybody reads it exactly the same way, but we all read it in our own way as well. But what John was saying earlier about people sitting with their pens and pencils, for example, before radio, before you had, you know, internet and could get it.
Yeah.
When we were being trained, so I was trained in the 90s, they really made a point of the fact that this is life and death. People have got a pencil and they're writing it down. And you must speak it clearly.
Wow.
And they must understand what you're saying. It's exactly how the whole thing goes, and it continues to be done to this day.
And you mentioned you were trained.
Well, so I was a journalist, first of all, and then I moved into announcing and news reading as well, and the shipping forecast is part of that work that you do on radio as an announcer. So you do both, you do news and you do the ships. And we were trained how to do it. So Peter Donaldson, who was the chief announcer for many, many years, very beautiful, very legend, absolutely, trained us all individually. And he would come in and go, no, 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 absolutely not. And then at the point at which you were good enough, you'd go on air.
And is it done live, Mairead?
It is done 100% live. And
you're
in there at 48 minutes past midnight,
yes,
and you must finish by 59:06 in order to get the national anthem on, get the pits and get you in. So, yes, it's all live. But the interesting thing about that is sometimes there's lots of weather, so the shipping forecast is very long, and so you have to read it quickly, and sometimes there's not that much weather, so you read it slowly because you still have to fill the time.
And how long in advance do you get the script?
Oh, you only get it sometimes 20 minutes.
Wow.
Or so, and you know, we have ways, especially those of us who've done it for such a long time, where you can work out how long and short it is, and you have little pointers where you've got to be at, you know, London or Fastnet or Irish Sea or Malinhead at certain times so that you can get to the end. But you're constantly reading it and looking at the clock.
Wow.
Reading it, looking at the clock.
Incredible.
And keeping your head together on it as well.
And it's an unfair question. We're going to ask it anyway.
Ray,
you're well able. if you fluffed live.
Well, yes,
like,
yes. Well,
pronounce it for me, Mairead.
South at Sierra. But we know all of those. Once you've been doing the shipping forecast for a while, you can say the names clearly. Sometimes you might say the numbers incorrectly, and you just say correction, you know, whatever the actual number is if you made a mistake. But for the most part, we don't make mistakes.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's rhythmic, and you're very used to it by the time you're allowed to be on there.
Well, we'll embarrass you even further, Mairead. Here's you reading the shipping forecast. You're now reading it on RT. By the way, for mariners who are listening, this is not today's shipping forecast.
And this is a while ago.
Forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Monday, the 16th of October. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Humber, White, Portland, Plymouth, Biscay, Trafalgar, Fitzroy, Seoul, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle and Faroes. The general synopsis at 1800. Hurricane Ophelia, southwest Fitzroy, expected Malin 973 by 1800 on Monday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours, Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira. Westerly or northwesterly 5 or 6, becoming variable 3, then easterly or southeasterly 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8 later. Rain later, good, occasionally poor. Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, variable 4, becoming cyclonic 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8 later, perhaps severe gale 9 in Forties, Cromarty and Forth. Rain at times, good, occasionally
Mairead,
poor.
Mairead, on that forecast, I wouldn't have put my nose outside the hall door that night.
Well,
oh, it is so.
A lot of the time it is.
You've such a beautiful voice, Mairead Devlin.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
And you, I can hear people, even though a lot of people like myself didn't understand it until I heard these series of programs at the weekend, and then started reading up it, not too serious out to see it.
Yeah. And that is the thing, it's like poetry as well, isn't it?
Lots
of people listen to it going to sleep. People used to say, I love you reading the Shipping Forecast late at night. And I'm thinking, you're lying in bed. I'm here.
And where did you begin your radio career?
Well, I'm from Portrush in Northern Ireland. And I was at Radio Foyle, BBC Radio Foyle in Derry. And then I got transferred to London, and then I got transferred and round and round. And the other thing about the Shipping Forecast back in the day, when I did it, starting in the 90s, was there were no regional accents. So that's another thing. So you will now find the newer announcers, there's lots of people with regional accents, and that's much better now. Yeah. Well, all of us used to sound exactly the same. We were Peter Donaldson used to say, you are a woman who reads the Shipping Forecast, and you are a man who reads the Shipping Forecast. That's it. No personality. Just deliver it in a, really succinct, clear way.
And you sure?
And that's all changed.
Are you retired now, Mairead?
I am retired. Okay. It's very lovely. And in fact, in Portrush, I can see almost Malin Head, or at least a bit of Donegal that you can see. And when I used to be in the studio late at night, when I got to Malin Head, I'd think, home, little wave. But now I do spend time back in Northern Ireland, and I'm in London, but I'm travelling because I'm retired. Okay. And that's what you do when you're retired.
And Mairead, is there any no-nos? Like, I know, for example, when if I read the weather for the Shipping Forecast, I think there'd be lots of collisions. I don't think people would notice. But I have one rule I have. I would never eat, for example, peanuts or nuts before you go next to the nearest studio. Anything that would be liable to give you a catch in your chest.
Absolutely.
As a do you have rules? Do you drink tea? Do you have a coffee? Do you stick to water? Mm-hmm. Or do you
stick to water?
Okay.
And we always have like little lozenges in the studio in case you get a tickly sore throat, and you can try and get that down before you go on, because obviously you're doing the programs as well and introducing the programs, and then you come to the Shipping Forecast. But the long Shipping Forecast, it's 11 minutes.
Wow.
Uninterrupted, without a breath. You know, you're in charge of it, watching the clock and doing it and reading it so that it sounds perfect on air. That's our aim. It's what we do.
Do you listen to it yourself, betimes?
I do. Yes. I do. Oh, yeah. No, I'm a big Radio 4 fan.
Yeah.
And you were saying it's on four times a day. It used to be the 5:20 in the morning one. It used to be done by the announcers, but now it's done by the weather people. But,
And Mairead,
when
you transferred from Radio 5 in Derry, London there, when you went to the UK, did you have to change your accent?
Well, I mean, I was actually brought up in Australia,
okay.
So my accent, okay. Although my family's from Northern Ireland, but yes, long story. So I was, I was only in Northern Ireland for a couple of years before I went to university in the UK.
Okay.
And then, so I had a lilting Northern Irish accent, but as I was saying, there was no regional accents in those days.
So your
that's why I sound like this.
So your parents spent a lot of money on developing a beautiful voice. They took you from Northern Ireland to Australia, to the UK. And
My parents immigrated to Australia and I was 1 year old. My family, my siblings were all born
and
there.
How long were you there?
But they decided to come back,
okay. It's a great. Are you asked to do ads, or was your voice ever requested? Apart from your professionalism as a journalist.
We weren't allowed to shoot the BBC. I did corporates after I left and in between times as well. You were allowed to do things, but you weren't allowed to say who you were, which is fair enough, But our voices are quite recognisable, Especially now.
No, it's beautiful.
And you do get to be much more identified, whereas before your name was barely mentioned on air. It was all about
delivering it.
And would there be, I know the answer to this from what the seriousness of which you attributed at the start about people's lives, but there's a great story here in RTE, Mairead, about our own Terry Wogan. And he used to, when continuity announcers would be back in the GPO, Terry was not unknown to be a prankster. And when you'd be reading out your continuity notes for the next programme, whatever, Terry was known to pour water over your head or even on one occasion set your script on fire. I presume there's no hijinks like that allowed.
No, and he's a little bit before my time.
I know.
But Radio 4 is a serious unit, and you back in the day you had a studio managers who were working all the mechanics in there, opening the microphones, and nowadays itself, you know, you do it yourself, so you are in charge. There's nobody near you, so nobody could get near you, and the doors are locked. That's another thing as well, because for security reasons, if anything happened, a very secure studio, so nobody can come in and take over the airline, the airwaves.
It's like back in the day when I started here, we had an armed member of the special branch sitting in radio reception because of the politics of the day. And it was about somebody coming in to take over a radio station. It's great to hear. Mairead, with your voice, you must be a good singer.
I haven't a note in my head. Not a note. No, brilliant. I stick to reading things out loud. Brilliant. No singing. Not allowed.
Well, you sound in extraordinary good health and fettle, and it's such a privilege now to meet you on the airwaves, having heard your voice for so long.
Thank you for having me on.
Typical of BBC Radio 4 in a good sense. They did a lovely series of programmes over the weekend. To mark the centenary, and then they even did a full programme on the piece of music "Sailing By."
When it was written,
it was gorgeous.
There's
a lovely Irishman on it. Give me his name again. I wrote it down when I was in bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. Harry McLennan.
Right.
And he'd been 50 years at sea. I think he's based in Drogheda. I don't know when that particular programme was made about the piece of music. But he was talking about being on the deck or being on the bridge and how important the shipping forecast was, life or death, to mariners. Mairead Devlin, good to meet you, Margaret. Thank you so much, Mairead, and continued good health. And well done. I think it's a fantastic job you did, and it's as you've proven here again, it's much more serious and much more organised and much more professional than simply reading out a list. Well done. That's Mairead Devlin.
Thank you so
Mairead. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Cromarty, Fort, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Humber, Thames, Dover, White, Portland, Plymouth, Biscay, Trafalgar, Fitzroy, Sole, Lundy, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Mallon, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes, South East Island. Now, I couldn't read that without taking a breath. And remember, Mairead read that for 25 years within a certain time. And after each of those names, there was numbers and losing its identity or low or high. But Fergus Sweeney in Blacksod. The lighthouse.
How
important is the shipping forecast to mariners? We have one on Radio 1, of course.
We do the Irish Met Service also issue their shipping forecast. They're hugely important to mariners and seafarers. It's almost the most up-to-date forecast you can get of conditions all around the coastline of Ireland and the British Isles, if you want to use that word, you know. So it is. It's hugely important to people who make a living at sea.
And even with technology and satellites and, you know, all the different accoutrements that are on boats, regardless of their size.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at the weather, the weather reading and weather forecasting, it's not exactly an exact science. Mother Nature can always throw a little spanner into the works, you know. So by getting the shipping forecast, you're getting the latest observations from the coastal weather stations. So when you're out at sea, and like your first contributor said, John, decisions have to be made, and sometimes decisions have to be made in 15 minutes, a half an hour. So by getting that shipping forecast, you're getting reports from areas surrounding you. So you know what's happening ahead of you on your journey. So you can base your decisions around that and make moves to make life easier and safer for you and your crew.
Okay, stay with us, Fergus. Patrick Murphy is been on before. He took on the Russians and won. Irish South and West Fish Producers Organisation. Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
When you go out, even though you'd have a satellite, I presume, and communications on your trawler, would you still listen to the shipping forecast on the radio?
It's the same as listening to the show. When you come on, everybody goes quite to listen to see what you have to say. So it's the same for the forecast. Everybody goes shush. Important it is.
Patrick, luckily they're not relying on telephone or mobile phone communication to hear, because unfortunately your line is breaking up, but we'll try and improve it. Pat Lawless, Pat's a well-known mariner. You were in the Golden Globe race in 2022. And would you stay in touch, or try to stay in touch, with the shipping forecast at 48 minutes after midnight Greenwich Mean Time?
I would, Joe. I'd listen to the shipping forecast like a religion.
Okay. How far away have you been? Sorry, what's the furthest you've been away when you've been able to get radio for, which used to be on long wave as well, but how is the, what's the transmission like?
Well, I sailed to Cape Town in 22 and I could get it all the way down and all the way up. But it's BBC World Service Africa. So they actually...
Oh, yeah, of course.
You get it on long wave, but as you move down, it changes. You get African news, but it's the same shipping forecast. And the most important bit to me is the synopsis in the area you're in.
Okay.
It starts with it, because that tells you where the highs and lows are, and then you listen to the area you're in, but that will paint a picture of what way the weather will be in a few days.
And when you were alone at sea for 9 months...
I would be if I finished the race, but unfortunately I had equipment failure.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to pull into Cape Town.
But you were alone for a long period. I mean, was set times and set sounds, so to speak, important to you?
Oh, it is important. I could get the world news when I was out there. The Queen died. I was sad to hear that and things like that. So you get the world news and then you get other news, but the shipping forecast, the song before it triggers memories.
Yeah, sailing.
I was a fisherman for 20 years and off the west coast here, up and down. And I love the... And Tom McSweeney used it.
Great Tom McSweeney.
And
Fergal Keane, yeah. It's great, yeah. Great.
Triggers. But the shipping forecast, it's unbelievable. It's still used so much, yeah.
Let's listen to Sailing Boy as we finish this segment. Thank you so much, everybody. That was fascinating. I'm sure we'll be coming back to it, Pat and Fergus, and we listen to Sailing Boy just as we go into this ad break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Pat Murphy is back and a better line. I hope. Patrick.
Hi, Joe.
That's great. How are you, sir? And you too, and many more than please God. Even with the technology, you still depend on the shipping forecast, on the radio, on the radio.
Yeah, because it's regular, Joe, and it's up to date like your previous contributors. So if somebody's shooting fishing pots or gear, we call it lee shore. So if the wind is blowing you on top of the shore, it's dangerous. So getting the forecast, you can plan ahead. So it's really, really important for boats of all sizes.
And when it's coming on, because it comes on at 48 minutes past midnight every night, like clockwork, is there somebody sitting taking notes?
Yeah, well, they'd hear it. Like, there's always somebody in watch, Joe. There's always somebody in the wheelhouse in the bigger boats. And it's given out more regular than that. It's given out a couple of times during the day. And we have Valencia as well, too. So it's not just the BBC. Like, we have good services at home as well. And it's on the hour. So it's really important.
And the reason why BBC are in the news is because yesterday was the centenary of the establishment of this radio broadcast 100 years ago. And as I say, this day next year, we'll be marking 100 years of Irish radio, believe it or not. I know you weren't around on day one, Patrick. I think it was, it was about 4 weeks into it before you tuned into Gabriel and Terry Wogan. But it's a great part. How are things down? How are things in the business and on the seas at the moment?
Well, we take our time, Joe, to remember the people. You know, it's a dangerous business and we lose some of our people, so we try to remember them and our families. But this time of the year, it's really tough because of the weather, you know, the worsening climate change and everything else. So our fishermen, if they don't catch their fish in a month, they lose it. So they lose that for the year. You know, it's we reset the dial every month. So just to be thinking of that when you're going out to the fishmongers or the supermarkets, pick up a bit of fish today and support your own. That's what I'd be asking people.
Okay. And Seamus Heaney actually wrote a sonnet based on, or a tribute, I suppose, to the shipping forecast. Here it is.
Dugger, Ruckall, Mallon, Irish Sea. Green swift upsurges, North Atlantic flux, conjured by that strong gale warning voice, collapse into a sibilant penumbra. Midnight and close down. Sirens of the tundra, of Eel Road, Seal Road, Keel Road, Whale Road, raise their wind compounded keen behind the bays and drive the trawlers to the lee of Wicklow. L'Etoile, Le Guillemot, La Belle Hélène nursed their bright names this morning in the bay that toil like mortar. It was marvellous and actual. I said out loud, a haven. The word deepening, clearing, like the sky elsewhere on Minches, Cromarty, the Faroes.
Isn't that absolutely beautiful? The sibilant penumbra. Would I get a pint of that down in Castletown Bear, would I, Patrick? Pint of sibilant penumbra, please.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's so beautiful, such a part of our lives. And you say this time of year is when fisher folk remember those who pass and the dangers of the sea.
Yeah, it's a poignant time of the year. Yeah, Joe, because it's such harsh weather. Normally it's around this time of the year that when something horrific is going to happen, it's this time, it's the toughest time. But fishermen, you know, they can't wait for the fine weather. They brave all, and this is why it's important then that they get up-to-date information from the forecast. And, you know, it's a friendly voice to hear, Joe, on a dark night as well, somebody coming over. So keeps us in touch with the mainland.
Okay, well, stay safe and our kind regards to all mariners. And if we didn't need a reminder, and we shouldn't need a reminder, the events leading up to Christmas with Holyhead reminded us as an island nation how dependent we are for our food, in terms of producing food by you going out and fishermen going out and all weathers and dangers or whatever. I know you take precautions, but how dependent we are on the sea and on the folk who work on the sea. So, Pat Murphy, kind regards and a Happy New Year to you and all seafarers everywhere. That's Pat Murphy. Back to who should be our next president. Eileen Regan. Eileen, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Thanks for speaking to me.
You're right. Thanks for contacting us. Who would you like to nominate as our next president of Ireland?
I'd like to nominate Anna Nolan.
Okay.
She's one of my seven children.
Ah, brilliant. And is this Anna Nolan, Anna Nolan from Big Brother and lots of things afterwards and TV presentation?
Indeed.
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
yes,
then tell us why you want your daughter, Anna Nolan. She's renowned for her smile, for her laughter. She's a television presenter, a producer. She was an international basketball player?
She was. She played for Ireland. She was a super player. She's quite athletic.
Okay. And you so she's represented Ireland before at basketball.
She has indeed.
Okay,
yes.
So why do you want? Yes. Where is Anna in your brood, Eileen? Is she number four or five?
She's Mary Jane. She's the fourth child.
She's the fourth.
I have to think about it, Joe. I'm 84, so
yeah,
you'll have to be a little bit.
Okay, Anna, tell
make
us.
Allowances.
And I know you have a high achieving family generally. I know that because I know a number of Anna's siblings. So tell us why you want your daughter Anna Nolan to be the next president of Ireland.
Well, when you spoke about the coming election, I immediately thought, of course, of Michael D. Higgins. He's iconic, and he's a liberal humanitarian, and okay. I immediately linked those words with Anna. And while she's in her mid-50s, I think if she became president,
yes,
she would grow into the role.
Okay.
She's, as I said, she's a liberal, she's a humanitarian, and I remember her as a child saying quite often, "I don't think that's right,
okay,
ma'am." And of course, I don't be half listening to her. But I don't think whoever is the next president is not going to replace Michael D, this learned
of course,
man.
Of course.
But they could continue on. I don't think he was a figurehead. I think he's the first president who wasn't a figurehead. He has brought insults on his head for speaking out about what he termed, what he believed were great injustices and cruelty.
Okay.
And I have found these qualities in Anna.
Here, and I think most people say that in that sense, he's irreplaceable. And you're right, Dave, every president, especially the last four or five, with the two, Mary Robinson, Mary McAleese, and Michael D, have built on top, and not taken from the cake, they're actually building the role of the presidency. But to come back to your daughter, Anna, by the way, she's around the same age as Mary Robinson and Mary McAleese were when they were elected. So she's not dissimilar in that sense. But she joined a convent, did she not? She's spoken about this in interviews, yeah.
Yes. She joined a convent. She thought, she believed then that a religious life was for her. She then concluded that she didn't want to be a celibate in a religious order, and she left. And she took the high jump into the Big Brother house. She is a risk taker.
Okay.
And
that was
that was
25 years ago.
And she does take risks, but she's not careless.
Okay.
And I think she would grow into the presidency, and the presidency would grow with her.
Okay. Now, Eileen, does Anna know you're nominating her?
No. I'm hoping a sense of humour will kick in.
And Eileen, why wouldn't you go for it?
Because I'm 84. Me and Michael have had our day in the sun, Joe.
Okay.
We should take it easy now.
Well, it can be seen where you talked about Anna's humanitarianism, her campaigning, her sense of humour, and her rootedness, and you can see where it comes from even in that short conversation. Eileen Regan, will you look after yourself for the inauguration, it's on November the 11th in Dublin Castle. Are you free that day, do you think?
Oh, of course I'm free on that day.
And would you get a new, I mean, you probably don't have to, would you get a new guna?
That's mandatory for me. Any occasion, Joe, and
Anna,
a new gunner.
And Eileen, you write that speech for Anna because it'd be brilliant based on what you've just said. Good morning, Eileen Regan. Happy New Year. Shane Galvin was on, is the BCO. Harry Buckland is on sound. Annette Egan produced. Anna Geary is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. For fabulous ideas and great savings, the winter sale is not to be missed. Now on, in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.